Today's podcast is brought to you by Gamefly.com. Sign up for a premium free 30-day one-game-out trial specifically for Picture Lock listeners at GameflyOffer.com/PictureLock. You're listening to WERA LP Arlington 96.7 FM. Welcome to another episode of the world-famous Picture Lock, where we focus on film. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson, filmmaker, film festival director, Washington, D.C. area film critic, and lover of film and TV. Picture Lock is a film review show in which we'll take an in-depth look at new releases, classic films, and I'll speak to filmmakers, critics, actors, actresses, and everyone in between on a national and local level. You can find all the back episodes and so much more at PictureLockShow.com. A couple quick announcements. Filmmakers, don't forget to enter into the Rosebud Film Festival. We're looking forward to receiving entries. Rosebud is open exclusively to D.C., Maryland, and Virginia filmmakers and is one of the only festivals giving out cash prizes to five finalists. Visit rosebudfestival.org for more details. Also, Picture Lock is looking for more contributors. If you're interested in covering films and doing interviews, drop me a line at picturelockshow@gmail.com. There are far too many opportunities out there that I can't make it to. So if you have a serious passion for film and love writing and talking about it, let me know. War Dogs is the rated R film based on the true story of two young men, David Pakow and Ephraim Diveroli, who won a $300 million contract from the Pentagon to arm America's allies in Afghanistan. It stars Miles Teller and Jonah Hill. I have a written review up on the film at PictureLockShow.com. I wish I could get into it here, but ladies and gentlemen, this was a pleasant surprise. I thought it was going to be a pretty silly film, but it actually wound up being an American dream story that also shines a light on our military and judicial system. Just go to the new releases tab at picturelockshow.com to get the full review. Now, the reason I can't give a full review over the air is because this week is pretty stacked with interviews, so I have to jump straight in. As promised, I have the full interview with last week's guest, president of the Washington, D.C. Area Film Critics Association, Tim Gordon. We'll talk about how he got into movies and starting the Black Reel Awards. I'll talk with Jesse Robinson, WERA's own radio coordinator, who moonlights as a working actor in the DMV. Sometimes you never know, you never know. And finally, I'll talk with Alex Oshmiansky, the director of the first feature film created for virtual reality. It's a packed one, folks. And that's all ahead on Picture Lock.
Hi, this is Nell Minow from MovieMom.com, and you're listening to Picture Lock.
You're listening to Picture Lock, where we focus on film. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson. And, you kind of got to hear a little from my next guest last week. But when this audience first met my guest, it was on the State of Black Cinema panel for Picture Lock TV, where he thoroughly entertained with his friendly back and forth with, at the time, D.C. office director Pierre Bagley. Now he's here to talk about Film Gordon. The Black Reel Awards, being the president of the Washington, D.C. Area Film Critics Association, his Summer Madness series. This guy has so much going on. Is my friend of the show, Mr. Tim Gordon. Welcome back to Picture Lock.
Man, I want to meet that dude. You just talk about who is that dude?
Right.
What's going on, man?
Man, it's so good to have you on, man. Definitely. You know, it's so funny because my relationship with Tim over the years has just grown from, you know, at one point I was just this guy trying to become a film critic, and I used to blow his phone up just leaving messages. Hey, can we do lunch? And now it's really cool because, you know, Tim definitely mentors me and helps me in the film critic game. But it's like, you know, I don't know. It's kind of like, you know, Jay-Z and Kanye, you know, like you got to respect Kanye, and then Jay put him on. So, I'm so happy to have you here on Picture Lock today.
Well, man, I'm happy to have watched how you have grown in the business, man, and a lot of the conversations we had. I'm glad to see that you have kind of implemented some of that, some of those of initiative. And as I was telling you, man, you know, off mic, that, you know, it's all about developing your own voice, man, and your own brand. And people respond to you, not just what you're saying, but they respond to you as the brand. If they trust you, that you're going to be straight with them in your film coverage, if you're going to be straight about your opinion, straight about your perspective. So I am delighted, man, to see you grow, man. And you kind of like represent for me like the next generation of the game, a game that has significantly changed since I got back in, or I got in like a quarter of a century ago, man. But, you know, it's always, no, seriously, but you always need new blood, man, to come in and, you know, and kind of fertilize and keep it moving forward.
Right, man. Well, I appreciate it. And I definitely want to get into how you actually got into film criticism. But the first question that I always ask is, when did you first fall in love with film?
Man, probably when I was 5 years old, man. I remember my dad loved movies. And it was one of the few hobbies or activities that he and I kind of bonded over, even when I was a child, man, getting dragged to theaters to watch westerns that I hated back in the day. You know, then much later on, you know, my dad, who worked for what would be the equivalent here of the Washington Post, the Newark Star Ledger, I remember him taking me after work, and we would go up to like the top floors where they would store the archives and old newspapers and kind of reading through that kind of stuff. So I was always interested sort of in history and sort of in classic film. And I think the major impetus for me, Kevin, was probably when I was around 13 years old, man. My dad brought home as a gift an MGM pre-production schedule. Now, in 2016, man, in the world of online, you can go online now and Google and get everything.
Right.
But if you're talking about maybe 35 years ago, man, that wasn't the case. Or 40 years ago, that wasn't the case.
Wow.
So when my father brought home a production schedule that projected films out for the next 5 years, man, I think that was my, I fell in love with movies, and this is going to be my life moment. So, you know, kind of from there, I became the guy who, you know, they would tease me, call me the movie man because I was in the Marine Corps. I mean, seriously. I was stationed in California, man, for like 2 years, and They had a dollar theater every Thursday, man, that you can go, and I would go and you know, and if you're listening at home, I'm not telling you to do this, but this is what I did. So I would spend a dollar, and I would watch four movies for a dollar, which basically meant that I would pay a dollar for the first movie and then sneak into the other three. So long before Robert Townsend and his boy was sneaking into the movies, I was doing that in the early 80s, man. So I went through a period of about 2 years where I literally saw, I don't know, like 300 movies. And I became that guy
Wow.
who everybody came to, like, you know, all right, Tim, I know you just saw it. You know, tell me about these movies. So that kind of led me on the path of being a film critic, you know, blessed with some ability to articulate and write. I started a newsletter back in around 1991, 92, called the Renaissance Review. That led to me being invited to do radio shows, much like yours, and then later on being on Howard University television, WHUT back in the day. And my that was how my career got started, man, back in the day.
Wow. You're listening to Picture Lock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson, and I'm talking with film critic, Film Gordon himself, Mr. Tim Gordon. That's a really cool story, Tim. And, you know, that's part of the reason why I love asking the question about, you know, when you first fell in love with film, because, man, I say this all the time, and I know it's probably annoying, but I'm always just impressed at how everyone has a different story to tell about how they first fell in love with film. And, you know, it's got to be special when, like you said, having that bond with your father, just watching films. And I mean, I could even relate, you know, just in terms of film, I used to always watch kung fu flicks with my dad, you know, like Super Ninjas, the Shaw Brothers films, all that kind of stuff. And just to hear him hooting and hollering and stuff like that, you know, it's amazing how you know, there's certain aspects of film that really kind of bring us together. And film is one of those communal experiences. You know, you go into the theater, the lights go down. Nobody's black, white, Asian, Latino, whatever. We're just people watching, you know, a production. And so, yeah, it's really cool to kind of hear that.
Yeah, man, it's an interesting story, man. And I think that, you know, you're absolutely right, because I've had conversations with people over the years about how they got into film. And you're right. No, there is no one path, man. You know, there's a path that eventually gets everybody to where they need to be. But it always usually starts off with the love of movies, man. You can't be a person who has to watch, I don't know, in some cases, 200 to 300 movies a year, and not really love watching movies. If you don't love it, man, you know, you can't sustain it. You can't do it on those cold nights in February when you and I are sitting in the theaters watching like some of the worst movies of the year.
Right.
If you didn't love it, man, you'd be like, bro, I'm out, man. I'm tapping out.
Right. All right, Tim. So, you know, one of the things I mentioned in the intro is the Black Reel Awards. So could you just let the audience know a little bit about what that is and even how you got started doing that?
Wow. Well, you heard me earlier talk about creating a newsletter called the Renaissance Review. And in 1992, man, the year we had Malcolm X and all of these other big movies that were released, I put something together that year that we put in the newsletter called the Oscar Micheaux Awards. It was six categories, you know, actor, best actor, actress, supporting actor, actress, screenwriter, and film. And of course, that first year we did that, we had Spike Lee, Malcolm X winning, you know, best picture, best director, best, you know, best actor for Denzel Washington, and on and on and on. So I kind of, that idea kind of festered in my head. And I was always, as a kid, a guy who used to it was two things you've always heard me talk about so far today. I've talked about loving history and research and loving film. So I would always watch like the Oscars and the Golden Globes, and they were years that I thought there were performances by African-Americans or people of color that just routinely got ignored. And that stuck with me until about 1996, when we had the famous Hollywood blackout, which is the equivalent of what happened several months earlier at the Academy Awards, when, like, in the major categories, there were no black nominees.
Mm-hmm.
But it happened in 96. And I remember the uproar, and it stuck with me. And I said, you know, You sometimes want to see something be created, and you wait around for somebody else to do it, and then you just go, well, you know, as Barack Obama said in 2008, we are the ones that we are waiting for.
Right.
So in 1999, man, I had a business partner at the time named Sabrina McNeil, and I told her, I said, I got this idea for this award show. I said, it's not one that exists. You know, we have the Image Awards that kind of mixes in, you know, music and films and literature. I said, we need a dedicated show that, or a dedicated award that goes specifically to African-Americans in film. And when we initially did it, it was film and it was television movies, but we didn't have independent cinema and we didn't have world cinema as we have now. But the pool of directors and actors that have come along over the last 16, now going on 17 years that we've been doing the Black Reel Awards, it has been mind-blowing, Kevin, because what I didn't see when we created it is how the African-American independent film community was so underserved.
Mm.
And how when we created that award, you know, the major studios, you know, because there's an Oscar and a Golden Globe that exists. So, you know, Jamie Foxx and all those guys are happy. You know, I've heard through the grapevine, they're happy that we give stuff out. But, you know, they're like, yeah, that's cute. You know, the television people, they have the Emmys. So, you know, that's cute to give that out. But for the independent folks, the only other award that exists that honors independent filmmaking is the Independent Spirit Award. So
mm-hmm.
for the Black Reel Awards to come along, and for all the people who aren't getting Spirit Awards, you know, there are people who to this day are indebted to us for helping to shine a light on their project, man. And, you know, it's one guy who we nominated who did an Adina Howard doc who has been blowing us up on Twitter for almost a year. You know, every time he sends out a tweet, he goes, man, my Black Reel Award nominated film. So it has had an impact, man. And like I said, we're going into our 17th year, and I've been on the phone having conversations with my team, man. This is going to be, bar none, the most competitive year we've ever had in television and in motion pictures. So you got The Birth of a Nation coming down the pike. You got Moonlight, Hidden Figures, Fences, you know, Miles Ahead from earlier this year, Southside with You. I mean, it is knockdown, drag out on the film side.
Right.
And on the television side, you're looking at Roots. You're looking at stuff like American Crime, Made in America, O.J. Simpson, Confirmation, Lady Day at the Emerson Bar and Grill. I mean, it is all the categories this year, and we've now included world cinema, because I think that the uproar over the Academy Awards that we had early this year, for me, solidified that we need to expand our vision and not just look at the 35% of the movies that are released in North America, but also look at work by, you know, African, you know, folks of the African diaspora that represent the other 65% of the world. So we have a slate of movies from the African continent that we will have under consideration for world cinema, as well as some other regions that we're going to expand to in the subsequent years. So I'm happy, man, with you know, when you talked about earlier, when you introduced me, you know, we all have to build a legacy in the game, man. We've got to always leave something behind that didn't exist before we arrived. So with Black Reel Awards, with WAFCA, Washington, D.C. Area Film Critics Association, you know, the work I've done, you know, programming film, teaching film, running film series, you know, teaching children about film. You know, my legacy is it's film, man. And I own it. I know what my mission is. And, you know, that's why when I look at you sometimes, I go, yeah, man. Kevin gets it, man. He's pushing forward. He's doing his thing, man. And that's all you can ask for, man, is everybody to have an opportunity to have their voice be heard.
Man, Picture Lock, I'm your host, Kevin Sampson. I'm getting hype right now just listening to Tim Gordon, founder of FilmGordon.com and the Black Reel Awards, Washington, D.C. Area Film Critics Association president. Yeah, man, I really appreciate how you put that together and what you just said in terms of, you know, with your legacy, that is it, right? Like, what film was it when we were talking about... now, obviously, in the 300, he said, you know, you'll be erased from the histories. But there's another film where he talked about how we all kind of just want to be remembered. And I think you're right. Giving something to the world that the world didn't have before is so important. And obviously, you know, you were ahead of your time in terms of the Black Reel Awards and seeing this... huge hole that has really kind of been on the forefront in the past couple of years with the Oscars and hashtag Oscar so white, etc. But yeah, man, I'm proud of you, Tim. Go ahead, man, do your thing.
Man, you know what, bro? I always tell people, man, that I'm not doing anything other. The only thing that God has blessed me with, man, is that when I was young, or I should say younger, like you are now. Mm-hmm. I had a posse of friends, man, who supported me, man. They would listen to me, and I was so passionate about my vision and what I wanted that people came along, man, and just was like, yeah, we're going to help you try to make that happen. So, you know, thinking about it, and everything hasn't been a success, man. I mean, there was a time in the early 90s, man, before ABFF, before Urban World, and before a lot of these other Black Film Fests, I tried to launch one here in D.C. called WAF, the Washington African American Film Fest. And that was 93, 94. And that, if we could have launched that, that would now be in like its 23rd year, and we'd have been ahead of our time. We'd have been up there, you know, doing our Sundance kind of thing by now. But that was not my vision. I mean, let me rephrase that. When I say it's not my vision, it wasn't what I was supposed to be doing. There were some bigger things I needed to do. So if it came down between doing another film festival or doing the Black Reel Awards, I gladly accept taking the Black Reel Award on, because that thing, as I said, you know, I was at NABJ over the weekend, right? Mm-hmm. And I went to a screening Friday afternoon to see the new upcoming Fox series that drops in February from Gina Prince Bythewood and her husband Reggie Rock Bythewood, called Shots Fired, starring Sanaa Lathan. And the running joke is in the Bythewood family is, you know, when Gina was here a couple of years ago, or several years ago now, with Deanna Lyson, it was her and Nate Parker. And I was like, you know, I got your Black Reel Award because she won. She was like, yeah, you know, I got one. Reggie's won three. I got to get me some more Black Reel Awards. So I saw him and they was like, yeah, what's going on? I was like, hey, I did what we can, man. He was like, is it an online award? I was like, no. They're Black Reel Awards at my house. I just haven't got one to you yet. But the fact that people recognize what we've done, recognize the importance of being, you know, honored by their own, I think to me, like I said, I didn't understand initially. I just thought it was a cool idea and it was something that was needed, but I didn't see the overall long-term ramifications on what something like that would mean to so many different people over the course of almost, like I said, 16 to 17 years, man.
Yeah, most definitely. All right, Tim, well, we're kind of coming to the end of this interview, man. It's really been good talking to you. I'm definitely going to have you back on. How can people check out your work, check out, you know, I mean, that's a plethora of different things, whether it is filmgordon.com, Black Reel Awards, there's so much. But, yeah, how can people find you?
Well, man, like I said, man, you know, you can – anything, the Film Gordon has become a brand that I created back in 08. So you Film Gordon, just, and I tease people and say, Google me, but it's actually true. So if you Google Film Gordon, it'll pull up the Facebook page, Twitter page, the Instagram page, the Pinterest page, the Snapchat page, anything on social media, it'll pull it up. And if you want to read the content, you can just go to thefilmgordon.com. We used to have filmgordon.com, but that's a long story. So just put the on front of it. And it is TheFilmGordon.com.
All right. Well, Tim Gordon, founder of TheFilmGordon.com, the Black Reel Awards, WAFCA president, appreciate you coming on the show and sharing your love for film.
Thank you, sir, for having me, man.
We'll take a quick break and be right back. Don't go anywhere. For you, the listeners of Picture Lock's podcast, Gamefly is offering a premium free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. I used to play PlayStation a ton pre-kids. I had money to buy the latest game out, but I really don't have the time or money like I used to give towards my hobby. That's why Gamefly makes so much sense. For a low monthly fee, I can get the latest console and handheld game delivered to my door. I keep it as long as I want and can send it right back to get a new one. The cool thing is, if you like a game so much that you don't want to send it back, you can keep it for a low used price. There are never any due dates or late fees. To get your free trial today, go to gameflyoffer.com/picturelock. Again, that's gameflyoffer.com/picturelock for your free 30-day trial.
The Epic Film Guys podcast is a film comedy podcast with two best friends celebrating everything we love about going to the movies. We've got great beer, amazing guests, and quirky characters unlike anything you've ever heard before.
Well, I just assumed you were drinking that chocolate stout that you were going to make with the cheapest crap chocolate ice cream in a Miller Lite.
I remember being a young man and my mother telling me I didn't have a name because I was illegitimate. I don't know what that word means.
Never be sorry on the Epic Film Guys podcast. Never be sorry. Cut in, talk over.
I'm sorry every time I finish doing an episode.
I didn't hear that, Nick. Don't bring it up yet. I'm not supposed to come out till like the end of the episode.
Subscribe to the Epic Film Guys on iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, or your favorite podcast app. And we'll see you at the movies.
Thanks so much for listening to Picture Lock Podcast, guys. I'm always trying to find great deals on cool things that I can offer you, as you know. And with Picture Lock, Loot Crate is offering an opportunity to save 10% on any new subscription at lootcrate.com. Well, what is Loot Crate, you ask? Loot Crate is a monthly mystery crate for geeks, gamers, and fans of pop culture, delivering cool and often exclusive items like collectibles, t-shirts, home goods, and more directly to your door every month. What makes Loot Crate so awesome to me is instead of getting my new graphic tees from the store each month, for the same price or less, I can get cool apparel from my favorite TV shows, movies, games, and more. And if you got a little more to shell out, you can get even bigger and better items. No matter what you pay per month, the value of the crate is usually more, so it's a win-win. You're going to search through the rack or shelves anyway. Let Loot Crate do it for you and throw a little curveball in there for you. To save 10% on any new subscription, go to trylootcrate.com/picturelock. Again, that's trylootcrate.com/picturelock to save 10% on any new subscription. Enter promo code BRIDGE10 for 10% savings.
Hi, this is Russell Max Simon, founder of 7K Films, and you are listening to Picture Lock. You can apply for one of our $7,000 film grants at www.7kfilms.com. Deadline is September 30th.
Thanks for tuning in to Picture Lock. I'm Kevin Sampson, and if you have been to Arlington Independent Media lately or have a program on WERA, then you probably have seen my next guest. He's a recent graduate of George Mason University, where he was the general manager of the university's radio station. He's been the radio coordinator here at WERA since May of this year, but much like me, at night, he turns into actor extraordinaire, Mr. Jesse Robinson. Welcome to Picture Lock.
Thanks, Kevin. I forgot my cape today, but I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, man, it's my pleasure. All right, the first question I always start out with is, when did you first fall in love with film?
When did I first fall in love with film? I always loved watching TV. I always loved watching movies. I think the first time I really fell in love with it is when I found out that I might be able to contribute somehow to the world of right. film and TV. I was a kid sitting down. I was watching Scooby-Doo on TV, and I just saw something. I saw one of the scenes, and then I did it to myself. I did a Scooby-Doo impression, and then I was like, oh my gosh, I could do that. I could do what they're doing right now. I could do the voices, and so I started pursuing things and auditioning and doing all these different things. I got involved in high school, middle school even, theater and like little improv classes and everything. So I remember sitting in front of the TV and I just...
Nice. And I didn't even have to ask for it. That's awesome.
So yeah, that's where it started. Scooby-Doo was a great show and that got me into TV and film, so...
That's cool, man. So one of the things for me, I started out acting as well. Like it was theater in high school and all that kind of stuff. But for me personally, I just found that going behind the camera, you could tell more of the story than being one part of the, you know, machine. I guess with acting, one of the things that I'm always fascinated about, and this is at least why I liked acting, is because in this life, you're Kevin Sampson, you're Jesse Robinson.
Sure.
But when you're on, you know, screen or on stage.
But at night.
Exactly. You get to be whatever you want to be. Is that what you enjoy about it?
Oh, and I've always loved a good character, from admiring those people on screen to coming up with characters on your own. I've always thought of myself as a character actor. If there was a time to play like the straight male lead, I did it a couple times in high school. Mm-hmm. I played Harold Hill in The Music Man, Albert Peterson, Bye Bye Birdie, those roles. But I found the supporting roles to be more interesting and more character driven. My goal as a kid, and it still is today, even though radio is the main thing, is to be accepted as a character actor and a supporting role. And I thought it would be amazing if you ever got the chance to win like an Academy Award for Best Supporting.
Now, this is really interesting because, you know, man, Jesse, this is so cool. Like, this is a new level to our relationship. I'm trying to get. So you're right. Supporting actors and character actors, they're so integral, but at many times that they're kind of looked over. Was it Tobolowsky, Steven?
You know, okay, yeah.
Who are some of your favorite character actors?
Okay, well, there you go. I'll answer that. And my favorites have all won, I think. Won at least one Academy Award in that category. One has recently just come onto the scene in his later years, which is funny because the guy was kind of the Mr. Bean of Germany, and then Quentin Tarantino just discovered Christoph Waltz, who just danced onto the scene in Inglourious Basterds, Academy Award. Django Unchained, Academy Award, both supporting. He's right. 2 for 2, and I really love the character work he does. Robert De Niro is another great character actor.
Give me an example of De Niro as a character actor.
Okay, in one of my favorite films, Silver Linings Playbook, as the father, Patrizio. It's just a great scene when he's talking to his son, played by Bradley Cooper, and they're just talking, and he starts crying. And apparently, I looked into it, did the research, I saw his interview on Katie. It was not scripted,
right?
And he channeled his own life into this supporting father figure role, because I guess one of his children also has mental issues. So.
Yeah, I remember hearing that same story at the time when the film came out.
And then the big one for me, the best character actor of all time, is Robin Williams. He is my idol. He's who I look up to and did look up to for a long time. And when he passed 2 years ago, I wrote a tribute article on the WGMU radio website, just because that was the only forum that I had to write this story.
Yeah.
And I was able to share my memories, first off, about him, because I closely related with Mrs. Doubtfire. My parents divorced when I was young, so when I would watch this movie, you had this sadness and the separation, but you also had this comedy factor to make it okay. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I got you. You
have something, the impressions and the characters and everything that were that was in that film really helped me as Jesse to cope with my own things that were happening in my life. But on screen, it helps, and it makes that seem easier and makes it seem okay.
Right. Jesse, why haven't we sat down to talk before? This is awesome.
Yeah.
We're bonding here right now, folks. This is like some real life in the moment stuff. This is Picture Lock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson. I'm talking with the radio coordinator of WERA, Mr. Jesse Robinson, who is also a prolific actor. I mean, if you look at this IMDb page.
That's sweet, Kevin.
Got to build them up,
you're
man.
Too, you know? Kind. You're too kind. Please. Autographs after, please.
All right, Jesse. So let's take a couple steps back. Let's go to GMU, okay. And then let's come up to the present. So just for a second, because we have to, let's touch on the radio stuff, then get back to film.
Oh, absolutely.
but yeah. So how did you get into radio at the university?
So I started, I really realized that I wanted to get into radio when I was in high school. I played football all the way through my senior year of high school. And then I started my last few games. It was exciting. It was a playoff game, whatever. I was not as athletic to move on with everybody else to basketball season. I just couldn't keep up. I was a lineman, so I mean, these guys were a little bit more athletic. So they move on to go play basketball, and I'm stuck with, well, what do I do? My friends moved on. And so I was given the opportunity to do the commentating on the sidelines for some of the games. And that's when I really realized that, wow, this is something I want to do and I'm good at. I can be involved in the sports and around the media and the center of it all and still be productive. So I took that to George Mason, and I was like, well, I want to get involved with radio right away. So I applied to WGMU. I took a radio workshop class, much like the classes that we have here at AIM On Air Radio Broadcast. I took that with the great Professor Roger Smith. He's been my radio mentor all the way up to now. Even I still will reach out to him for advice, and he brings the WGMU radio camp here to AIM to tour the facilities. But he really helped me grow, and I started a music rotation show, and then I launched a show called The Sports Hour, where I did sports talk by myself, which I found was very challenging to just talk to yourself. Usually you have a co-host to bounce things off of and get heated in sports talk. But I couldn't find anybody at the time to join in. But so I did it by myself. And so I would sometimes have guests. I had Charlie Casserly, the former GM of the Washington Redskins. I had couple Redskins players, Ronaldo Wynn, Darrell Young, and then the GM of Mason Athletics, the head director, Brad Edwards, who was on the Redskins Super Bowl team.
Oh, wow.
He came in the studio. I got to wear the Super Bowl ring. That was pretty cool. but yeah, that was the Sports Hour. And then my final show that I ended up doing was a show called Improv for Mason, which was a fully improvised radio show, where the only thing we had to go off of was the Twitter suggestions that the listeners tweeted into the studio.
Oh, that's awesome.
We took one word, and that's how we would. So you take one word, and then you either go right into something, or you tell a story, or what does that word remind you of? And then we're all round table in the studio, and you tap each other on the shoulder to continue a scene, and then you clear the scenes, and it's full improv on the radio.
Man, that is so cool. You're listening to Picture Lock. I'm your host, Kevin Sampson. I'm talking with Jesse Robinson. He's the radio coordinator here at WERA, but an actor as well. And if you'd like, you could go ahead and tweet at Picture Lock Show, and I guess you can ask Jesse to do some kind of impression or something like that.
I will do it, sure. I actually have a couple videos on YouTube that I did before I went to college because I was bored the summer before I left for school, and I did all of the different impressions that I could do from Scooby-Doo, Family Guy, some Simpsons characters, celebrities, comedians.
Who do you got from Family Guy? I want to hear that.
Show Peter Griffin's here. Yeah. You like that? You like that right there? Yeah. Oh, there's Stewie Griffin as well. Hello. So yeah, I could do some of the,
oh my God, this is, this is, Cleveland Brown.
Yo, Jesse.
I have not done those, Kevin. I'm going to be honest with you. I haven't done those in several months. So I was actually very surprised at how good those just went.
Right. That was awesome, man. Oh,
yeah,
man.
They're up on YouTube somewhere. You can find it if you're really interested.
That's hilarious. I'm learning so much about you. Man, we should have sat down and just done this interview like a long time ago. This is fun.
Well, we finally had the time.
I know, exactly. All right, man. So from Mason, you come over here to Arlington Independent Media.
That's right.
How has things been? I mean, we just launched almost a year ago now, and we brought you on. How's it been as a radio coordinator?
I mean, with AIM, I first walked through the doors here at AIM in 2012. I was a guest on Allison Howard's Lights, Camera, Action show.
Yes.
I think twice. Show. I was on twice or three times on her show talking about the different theater projects I was doing. I was just getting into George Mason stuff back in 2012. But so I remember I also auditioned for my first short film ever here at Arlington Independent Media.
Okay.
And I got cast in The Pharmacist. Was directed by Paula Wood, who used to frequent this area.
Yeah.
But yeah, my first short film audition was at AIM.
Wow.
And then so I mosey on back after Paula Valley invited me to come to the launch of WERA on December 6th. He was actually my professor at the time at George Mason University. He taught free speech and ethics. I was in that class. He said, "Oh, you're the WGMU radio general. Come out to the launch and participate." So I met with Elaine, who's the membership coordinator here at AIM, And she got me involved with Hef Munson, one of the members here.
Yeah.
And we did a full-on radio play demonstration with all the Foley boxes and all of the different props. And I brought a couple actors from my GMU radio circuit. And we came and I directed the radio House of Horrors for all the members to come watch. It was like a demonstration. So that's where it really started at AIM. And then I got a call on a February night, and Paul said, "Hey, we have an opening, and we'd like you to come in and interview for a radio coordinator or radio associate, then radio coordinator full time in May." So
yeah,
it's going well, and we've got nearly 90 programs on the schedule. I could only dream of reaching 80 at WGMU during my time there, and we already have 90 here. And more than half of the 168 hours in a week are filled by original WERA programming. So I couldn't be happier.
Man, it's crazy. You know, as you talk about that, like my mind went back to the radio play. And then I see your face now. And it okay, that's awesome, man. Well, listen, you know, this has been really great talking to you, and we're going to continue this conversation. But for the listeners, you're going to have to go to the podcast for the Picture Lock Unlocked. I knew when I sat down with Jesse, we were going to go past 15 minutes, and you know, that's going to happen. Obviously, I'm talking with Jesse. He's a great guy. This is like just a great time so far. So if you want to hear the rest of the interview with Jesse, flip on over to the podcast. You can subscribe in iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play Music, wherever you download your podcast, and you can hear more from him.
You should do it. You should go to the Unlocked, because I've got a full story about how I met Robin Williams, so you're not going to want to miss it. Go to Picture Lock and listen to the podcast. We've got a lot more really cool stuff. You can follow me on Twitter at JesseRobinson94 and hit up my IMDb page. Just search Jesse Robinson. You can check out all the cool production photos and credits. So, yeah.
Awesome. Always the professional. Jesse, thanks so much for coming on Picture Lock, and we'll continue this conversation on the podcast.
Sounds good, Kev.
Hi, I'm Erin Essenmacher from Women in Film and Video, and you're listening to Picture Lock.
This is Hamilton Whitney, founder of FilmHamster.com, and you're listening to Picture Lock.
Hey, y'all. This is Otessa Goddard, creator of Orange Juice and Bishop's Garden and Lemma, and you are listening to Picture Lock.
WERA 96.7, thanks for tuning in to Picture Lock. I'm Kevin Sampson, and virtual reality is a multi-billion dollar industry. It was only a matter of time before we went from short films in VR to getting a feature film. My next guest has the honor of being the first virtual reality feature filmmaker, and in it, he invites you to join the Russian Mafia. Alex Oshmiansky, welcome to Picture Lock.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me on.
I'm delighted, man. First question I always start out with, when did you first fall in love with film?
I'll be honest, I really can't remember. Like, I've loved movies as long as like my memory goes back. I just like, as a kid, I always just like loved watching movies. So I don't think I have a really good answer for you, to be honest.
You know, it's cool. I always ask that question, tons of different answers. And honestly, I can't pinpoint the first film that I saw. I do remember seeing like the animated Beauty and the Beast in theaters, and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles sticks out. But I don't have like that one, you know, that I could talk about.
Yeah.
But like you, yeah, like, it's just like you always loved it.
Yeah, like the first film I kind of remember watching and really, really liking. The first film I can remember at all, like, is when I was very young. You remember the old Disney movie, The Rocketeer?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
yes.
Going back as like an adult, maybe not the most like sophisticated film in the world, but like as a kid, it was awesome.
All right, I promise we're about to get into this interview, but speaking of The Rocketeer, I watched that as well, and I kept drawing jetpacks because like I thought I was going to be able to create my own jetpack to wear one day and like fly around, which never happened, but you know.
Oh, dude, I think I did the exact same thing.
I love it. All right, so Alex, this is your first film. Why did creating a virtual reality feature appeal to you?
Oh, Well, you know, I'm kind of a technology guy, so I always like playing around with sort of new techniques and new tools. You know, I just really love the idea of being there in the movie with the characters. Like, imagine you could, like, be there with the crew from The Sopranos. Or, like, I mean, I just thought that would be really, really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I read about the technology about a year and a half, 2 years ago, and I thought, you know, I got to do this. Like, if it hasn't been done yet, like this is too cool.
Yeah, most definitely. All right, so just tell the audience a little bit about your film, Career Opportunities and Organized Crime. What's it all about?
Okay, so the plot of the film is just kind of a mockumentary, so to speak, kind of like The Office. So the plot is a group of Russian mobsters in Baltimore aren't doing very well. Like, their business isn't going so hot. So they decide to fix it the only way they can think of, which is to make a recruitment movie to get more mobsters to join. So, yep, exactly. So the film is actually a recruitment movie for the Russian mafia.
Nice, nice. You're listening to Picture Lock. I'm talking with the writer-director of the Career Opportunities and Organized Crime, Alex Oshmianski. The film premiered at South by Southwest earlier this year. What has the response been to the film thus far?
Oh, no, I've been really pleased with the response so far. Like, I've been very happy about it. It's been generally very positive. A lot of it focuses kind of like on the technology right now, since it's so new. But, you know, when people watch it, they're kind of blown away just by, like, you know, I'd love for them to say, like, your movie's incredible. But to be honest, I think the thing most people are most blown away by at first is, like, because a lot of them haven't ever seen anything at all in virtual reality before to give it a shot.
Mm-hmm.
They're just like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Like, I can look anywhere and see everything that's going on.
You know, I think so too. I gotta be honest. When I was watching a film, I had to watch it in spurts because for me personally, like, I watch movies all the time, but this was the first time I was actually immersed into the film. So it's like you have to really kind of train your brain to watch the movie in a different way. So it's kind of cool because, like, I can look at what the main thing that's going on, you know, guys being interviewed for this mockumentary, but then I can turn around and I can look at, like, the crew member that's standing off to the side, or sometimes someone's actually at a dinner table and they're talking to somebody that's over across the dinner table, but, like, you actually have to swivel your head to, like, see, like, who they're talking to, and it feels like, you know, the voice are coming from that direction. So it's a really cool way to actually see films. But I was like, whoa, I gotta take a little break here. Like, it's so different.
Yeah, we get that response sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, people are kind of almost overwhelmed by it. So we're actually, we're going to put it out in one big block, like an hour and 30 minute movie, like the way we kind of thought about it at the beginning. But we're also going to kind of break it up in chunks for people who, like, are just... Because that's actually one of the common responses we've been getting, is they're kind of overwhelmed by, like, the sense of just being transported somewhere.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was saying, yeah. And when you were saying, like, it's kind of a different experience from a standard movie, like, another thing we've been kind of getting is that it's kind of, like, halfway between kind of watching a movie and going to the theater. Because,
mm-hmm.
like, in a standard movie, right, the director kind of tells you where to look all the time. Like, they pick the shot.
Right.
Versus here, like, you're free to look wherever you want in the scene, much like you would if you're going to, like, a play. So this is kind of, like, halfway in between that. Like, yeah, no, it's a really, like, interesting thing. It's kind of, like, there on its own.
Right. It totally is, because like I was saying, like, as I was watching it, you know, I just wanted to explore the environment. I wanted to look at the orange soda on the desk, and then, you know, the actor actually picked it up as I was looking at it. So it's like really, it's a really cool way of, like, actually viewing movies. All right, you're listening to Picture Lock. I'm talking with the writer-director of the first feature film made for virtual reality, Alex Oshmianski. Alex, how do you technically create a virtual reality film?
Oh, so, you know, there's a lot that kind of goes into it. Oh, it's fairly similar to making a standard or conventional film, and a lot of it's different. You know, in pre-production and actual production, there's a lot more thought that has to go into a sort of production design. So, you know, in a standard movie, like, you only have to sort of dress the set, so to speak, like, immediately in front of the camera. Mm-hmm. In a 360 movie, like, everything that's behind the camera, you're going to see that as well. So all of a sudden, like, you have to think about where everything in the room is, like, at all times. and, like, I'm going to call them Easter eggs, for lack of a better term, but there's, like, a two or three times in the movie where, like, oh, we forgot to remove that from the set.
Nice.
But, yeah, so there's that aspect of it. And the actual filming is done with, well, what we actually did about a year ago, because it was sort of the major technology in use at the time, was actually we used six GoPro cameras placed back to back to back to back, shooting in each different direction. The technology has come very quickly, and even now, like, the cameras are a lot better. And then we take that footage and sort of stitch it together into one big picture, which then gets put into the virtual reality movie. So the actual filming of it isn't that onerous, but the post-production takes a really long time.
Yeah. I was gonna ask you that. About how much time does it take to actually edit the film?
So it took us about 9 months. Just put all the footage together, basically. So we got it done, like, just a couple days before South by Southwest, basically. Of just, like, sitting at a computer terminal and making sure, like, one image fit into the other.
Right, right. Man, that's incredible. So I think I wanted to kind of ask, you know, after doing this, what would you say you've learned for, like, the next one? I'm assuming you probably are going to do another one, or, you know, is that on the horizon?
Yeah, if I can. No, we actually have a couple new projects in the works now. The next one that we're doing is actually a documentary set in Iraq. We got virtual reality cameras to the front lines with the Kurdish forces fighting ISIS. So we've got some virtual reality war footage we're putting together now.
Are you serious?
No, serious, yeah. So that we're hoping to get out in the next couple of months.
Wow. I mean, because documentaries, as is, they take you to the front. They can take you to the front lines. You know, I have a friend that actually had a film where we were embedded with a Canadian troop that's on the front lines in Kandahar. And
I think I've seen that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like that in itself is incredible. And the fact that you're saying that we can now immerse ourselves in this, that's just, wow, that's taking it to a whole nother level. I can't wait to see that.
Yeah, you know, it's going to be interesting. Hopefully it makes people, like, more empathetic towards the, like, well, that's the sort of grandiose goal. It's like people see it and they're like, oh, like, you get war sucks on, like, a regular documentary, but, like, here you're like, oh, this really sucks.
Right, exactly. Because I think that's what that's exactly what I'm talking about. And just in terms of the connection, I think so many times for those of us that don't go out to the front lines and things like that, you know, it's a world away. But, like, if you can actually immerse yourself and you can, in some kind of ways, almost feel like you're actually there, man, that's gonna speak volumes.
Yeah. So, yep. So hopefully in the next few months, we'll have that in place. And a lot of what we learned in career opportunities in organized crime went into the technology for the documentary to make it, like, easily mobile enough and still high quality to get that footage in very tense situations.
Right, man. You're listening to Picture Lock. I'm talking with the writer-director of the first feature film made for virtual reality, Mr. Alex Oshmiansky. Alex, it's really been great talking with you. I guess in terms of your film right now, you know, what do you hope people take away from it? How can people check it out?
Oh, sure. Honestly, I just hope people like it. you can check it out at www.mafiacareersmovie.com. That'll take you to our partners at realhouse.org, where you can download the film and watch it on, basically the way that's easiest for most people to watch it now, believe it or not, is actually just on their phone. So you can get like a virtual reality headset, so to speak, a Google Cardboard viewer, or that you can put on your head and strap on your head for, maybe $5-$10 now. And you can sort of transform your own phone as long as you have like a Android or iOS, Apple smartphone. You can sort of watch the movie with just your phone. And that sounds kind of weird because, most movies are like, you have to see it in like the big multiplex and, the 70mm cut. Just so authentic film, and here we're kind of like, no, the best way to view this is on your phone. But you can also view it on like your computer and of course on the more expensive dedicated virtual reality headsets like the Oculus Rift or the HTC Vive, which are on the market now.
Wow, that is incredible. All right, well, Alex Oshmiansky, director of the first feature film for virtual reality. Once again, I appreciate you coming on the show, and definitely please stop back by. Let me know when you complete your next film, because I would definitely love to see that.
No. Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
That's all for this episode. I'd like to thank my guests, Tim Gordon, Jesse Robinson, and Alex Oshmiansky for coming on the show. You can find Picture Lock on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Periscope. Everything is at Picture Lock Show. Watch back episodes of the TV show at youtube.com/Picture Lock Show. You can download the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play Music, and other places podcasts are downloaded. Don't forget to check out the website, picturelockshow.com, for movie reviews, news, and to subscribe to our newsletter to get a chance to win tickets for movie screenings in the DMV. If you're interested in being a guest on the show, you can fill out the form on the website. Feel free to drop me a line to let me know that you're enjoying the show as well at picturelockshow@gmail.com. All music is done by my guest, the Prop 13. I appreciate that, bro. I'm Kevin Sampson, and until next time, I hope you stay locked on film.